apes do not want war, but will fight if we must. Ape home! Human soul!
I'm Nick Nyland, and this is Keynotes. Each episode, we examine the innovative ways music is used in film. Welcome to part 3 of the Planet of the Apes series. Just a warning in advance, this episode will contain spoilers for the original Planet of the Apes and all 3 movies in the new trilogy, Rise, Dawn, and War. On the first Planet of the Apes episode, we talked about Jerry Goldsmith's score for the original 1968 Planet of the Apes. We gave some history. Apes was part of a new wave of post-war film scores that pushed the envelope, moving away from traditional European-influenced orchestral scores and embracing different techniques. In Apes, Goldsmith took the concept of a world upside down and ran with it. The score is intentionally disorienting, making our experience frantic and confusing. He used unfamiliar ethnic instruments and non-musical objects as instruments. Some of the orchestra was processed through effects, specifically the Echoplex tape delay, giving a touch of the futuristic to an otherwise primitive and tribal-sounding musicscape. The original film score is intentionally obtuse, leaving the listener with little to latch onto or connect to. It's cynical and detached, like Charlton Heston's character.
Caesar is home.
On the second Planet of the Apes episode, we talked about Rise of the Planet of the Apes, the beginning of a trilogy of new films focused on Caesar, the first intelligent ape who leads an uprising of subjugated simians. Patrick Doyle's music for Rise brought sincere emotion to the Planet of the Apes franchise. The traditional orchestra was back, as were old film music conventions like the leitmotif. But he also carved out a space for experimentation. He had instruments mimicking animals like apes and insects, a mixing of electronic components with the acoustic orchestra, and he even wove manipulated sound recordings into the music as texture. Following Rise of the Planet of the Apes was a pair of films both directed by Matt Reeves and featuring the music of Michael Giacchino. Responsible for the music of 2 Mission Impossible movies, 3 Star Trek movies, Jurassic World and its upcoming sequel, Star Wars Rogue One and Spider-Man Homecoming, Michael Giacchino has sort of become the go-to person in Hollywood for reworking classic scores, often with clever, self-aware rearrangements. Here in Star Wars Rogue One, he gives us a new title cue that's reminiscent of John Williams' main Star Wars theme. It's just as heroic, but less invincible, more desperate. It's this ability to crosstalk with iconic scores that makes Giacchino so wonderful. With a reverence for the origins of the franchises he works on, it's not surprising he would want to bring a touch of Jerry Goldsmith's 1968 score into the fold. After surviving a crash, our characters find themselves in a mysterious land. Exploring, they start to make strange discoveries, getting mixed up in tribal skirmishes, tossed into cages, and experiencing the mind-bending metaphysics of time travel. No, this isn't the original Planet of the Apes. It's the sci-fi series Lost, for which Michael Giacchino composed a pretty wild and memorable score for 6 seasons. Giacchino's music for Lost trades heavily on the influence of Goldsmith. The musical landscape features odd rhythms beaten out on scraps of metal, wild string runs, aggressively falling and rising horn rips, and an overall experimental approach to score, atmosphere, and suspense. Giacchino borrowed ideas from Goldsmith's Planet of the Apes and used them in Lost, and then brought his tactics from Lost to his work on the new Planet of the Apes. One could look at just the piano to mark a difference between the 1968 Planet of the Apes and Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. The former uses it as an instrument of chaos. The abstract Schoenbergian piano parts function as detached atmosphere and tension. The keyboard performances themselves are also challenging and impressive, feats of technical prowess. On the other hand, Giacchino often composes very sparse piano themes, with silences that are as heavy and laden with emotion as the notes. Lost has a theme called Life and Death, the show's resident funeral song. This type of minimalist, childlike arrangement has become an effective signature of his as a composer. The 1968 Planet of the Apes doesn't have a single piece of music that conjures up emotion in this way. Not that it's trying to, but Dawn of the Planet of the Apes does. Again embracing the leitmotif technique that Goldsmith's score tossed out, Giacchino leads us into Matt Reeves' ape story with this main theme for Dawn. It sets up this world as covered in a deep, dark melancholy. This theme hangs over the entire film and even makes appearances in the next one. Giacchino's score contains a vocal element like Doyle's, but unlike the African choir in Rise, it's not ethnically specific. Here, the chorus tempers the sorrow with a sense of wonder and a hint of hope. The main theme tends to be more tied to the humans in the story. The theme kicks off the film over all the exposition on the plague that's decimating mankind. Most of the variations on this theme contain a dare-to-hope quality. Despite the fear and anger expressed by members of both their societies, Caesar and the human Malcolm come to a mutual understanding and make an attempt at truce. At this point in the film, hope bubbles up a bit more, but the wariness remains. With the soft bells, the theme's fragility is highlighted, a kind of guardedness that says things can take a turn for the worse at any minute. Transitions to a more sinister theme we'll talk about in a bit. The Dawn theme also recurs significantly and at some of its most tragic, backed by the choir when Caesar's son Blue Eyes witnesses the apes massacring the humans. We're given these punches of brass and percussion like stabs to the heart. If you listen closely, there's even a higher pitch going on in these hits, almost like the sad squeak of a monkey. When a wounded Caesar finds his way back to his house from Rise with the help of the humans, we get a heartfelt rendition on the harp, but there's scratchy, discordant strings underneath, reminding us how far away from his time with mankind he's gotten. Caesar himself is given a pair of motives that will develop and carry through this film and the next. Unfortunately, we're not going to hear the theme Doyle developed for him in Rise of the Planet of the Apes. This one. Cecchino and Reeves have decided to toss out that score in favor of starting anew. Caesar's first new theme, his main one, is often used to signify compassion or empathy, and is connected to his personal emotions. It's at once morally righteous and full of responsibility, simultaneously humble and proud, and has a hint of weariness from its down-tempo, reluctant start. It also pairs down nicely to simple arrangements, so Cecchino can give it his trademark minimalist piano touch. There's a key change in it. There. That tosses it off balance briefly, making Caesar seem maybe fallible and, shall we say, human. On the other extreme, the theme makes its first appearance in an action cue. On Daring Brass, as Caesar is leading a hunt, but only the first phrase. Right here. This is one of the rare instances of the theme being used with adrenaline. Reeves wants to open on a self-assured Caesar before his leadership is really put to the test. The antagonist of Dawn of the Planet of the Apes is Koba, a bonobo who was tortured in captivity by humans and has a strong hatred of them. Anytime the apes make an aggressive advance towards the humans, whether or not it's by Caesar's order, Koba's warmongering theme sounds. As you'd expect, it's very martial and quarrelsome. You might also notice that same counter melody playing underneath that played under Caesar's motif during the hunt. At the beginning of the film, Caesar and Koba are on the same side, and there's a part of Koba's dangerous aggression in Caesar's heart. The theme escalates as the film advances in a pretty cool way, becoming less human and more animalistic. It has the effect of widening the gap between the apes and the humans as Koba steers the apes away from making peace. Here, when Koba shoots Caesar, staging a coup, Chikino launches us into it with jittery, mice-like strings. The orchestra growls and quivers wildly, the winds flutter tonguing and trilling, the percussion slackened with brush sticks. Stated almost clumsily like a bull in a china shop as, during the battle, Koba heads to hijack a tank. Part of the warlike character of this theme comes from that heavy, repetitive rhythm. It's rhythm before melody all the way. Chikino hammers it out again and again. And at some point, Chikino only needs to give us the rhythm, and we know it's Koba. Koba's motif is very short and repetitive, which tells us that his character is single-minded, short-sighted, and relentless. Compare this to Caesar's theme, which is long and complicated, struggling with a mix of different emotions. The rhythm this piece is based around reminds me of the theme from another film, another science fiction story that takes place in a world where mankind is battling against their own creations. The Terminator. The insistent metallic rhythm speaks to the Terminator's unshakable mission to kill. It's not the same exact rhythm. In fact, the Terminator theme is in a strange time signature, but it's similar with that kind of strong emphasis on the front of the pattern. It's in a hurry, it's reckless. Koba, having staged his false flag attack, advances his assault on the human fortress with the apes. The major developments in this battle are marked by broad and aggressive orchestral chords. When the ape siege begins, when Koba retaliates from a bazooka blast, and when, after the battle, the human prisoners are herded into captivity, we'll hear this kind of motif. This very much reminds me of Max Steiner's theme for King Kong. Obviously another ape story, Steiner evokes Kong's massive size as the orchestra thunders three ominous descending notes. In Dawn, Koba's wrath is given Kong-like scale by this thunderous treatment. I mentioned how Giacchino likes to mine the original scores of the franchises he works on for ideas. As you'll recall, Goldsmith's score doesn't offer much in the form of quotable melodies, but there's one permutation of that pseudo-theme in his score we talked about earlier. It's played in the bass register in a revolving note pattern, like an endless executioner's march, and used to sustain tension. Now listen to this circling Act 3 piece from Dawn. Some moments in Dawn just feel like Goldsmith references in spirit. In this cue underneath Koba's theme, listen to the jittery xylophone flourishes layered with flutes. Thank you. ML Richards, the percussionist from the original Apes recording, performed on Dawn and War, and he actually brought the mixing bowls and ram's horn used on the original. In War, we hear the ram's horn when Rocket the Ape rises up to confront a prison guard. Coming up right here. And as we know from Lost, Chikino, like Goldsmith, loves to experiment with music to create strange sounds. So in some textural ways, this film takes Planet of the Apes back to its avant-garde roots. In this film, there's a continuing reference to 2001: A Space Odyssey. George Ligeti's Requiem, an apocalyptic choral piece that's meant to signify Judgment Day, its pure existential terror. Ligeti used a technique called micropolyphony, where a mass of singers' individual voices blend into each other to create dense, cloud-like clusters. Great care is taken to create vocal sounds that register as human suffering. The result is something insanely vast and haunting, like the souls of the damned crying out. Not coincidentally, this piece is introduced in 2001 when the ape-like proto-humans discover the monolith, which marks a leap upward in civilization. Here's the original Ligeti piece used in 2001. Apes, this technique is first used during the Great Hunt at the beginning of the film. It's already striking to see apes in war paint, organized and hunting with weapons, but it's particularly chilling when underscored by the Requiem Choir. The great thing about this particular style of choral treatment is that it's more atmospheric bedding than musical melody. It's great for imbuing a scene with a sense of apprehension before giving way to a big moment. Moments in Dawn where Ligeti's apocalyptic choir definitely give us that sense of anguish and impending doom. And here it climaxes, rising and falling, then disappears into the orchestra as we get the pretty menacing image in slow motion of Koba on horseback, leaping through flames. Chikino returns again and again to the choir to a kind of timeless effect. It paints the end showdown as almost mythological in scale. Caesar and Koba, compassion and hatred incarnate, collide, and the music elevates the showdown to operatic heights, the fate of the world hanging in the balance. This cinematic trope of the epic choir always makes me think of Duel of the Fates from Star Wars. of the pieces that it takes inspiration from, O Fortuna from Carmina Burana by Carl Orff, which has been used a ton in cinema, especially in movie trailers. To go even further back, what's called the Requiem Mass in concert music. These pieces borrowed the tradition of the Masses for the Dead in the Catholic Church, and they became sort of their own subgenre in classical music. Here's Mozart's Requiem. They took from the Mass the element of liturgical chanting, the subject matter of death and the soul gave composers juicy thematic material, fit for big operatic adaptations of these texts, particularly in the End Times Day of Wrath section. Here's Verdi's Requiem. The Ligeti Requiem choral piece we talked about is meant to be a modern recontextualization of this tradition, written in the aftermath of the Holocaust. There's another theme, or more of a motif for Caesar, that's set up in Dawn, but carries more into the next film. I call it his burdened leader theme. It's got a bit more mythological weight to it than his personal theme. This melody ascends, but with conflict and difficulty, trading back and forth between major and minor chords. Caesar kills Koba to stop the bloodshed. He's learned that compassion and hatred exist on both sides. His own species is just as corruptible as humanity. His main theme swells. His apes are counting on him now more than ever. This new theme, the burden leader theme, works its way in. Caesar was able to temporarily subdue the escalating conflict, but permanent damage has been done. A larger, unavoidable battle has been set in motion. The choir underscores the weight of this turn of events. chord suggests finality, inevitability. War is coming. For some reason, this ending also makes me think of the end of The Empire Strikes Back. Maybe it's the mix of the triumphant music and the dark ending. In Empire, the rebel fanfare melds with a stretched version of the Imperial March. Empire Strikes Back, also with giant brassy chords, another middle chapter that leaves us on an uneasy finality. For contrast, let's compare this to the resolved and hopeful ending of Rise of the Planet of the Apes. And one more time, the dark end of dawn. Transporting us into the final chapter with a jungle reworking of the famous 20th Century Fox fanfare, I think War for the Planet of the Apes is perhaps the boldest score in the new trilogy. Giacchino is back, blurring the line between sound design and music as he creates ominous atmospheres and sonic textures. He draws from a rich history of film music composition, pulling in ideas from many composers we've talked about already: Goldsmith, Bernard Herrmann, Ennio Morricone, and Elmer Bernstein. And some ones we haven't discussed: John Barry, Danny Elfman, and Miklos Rozsa. Like the original Planet of the Apes, Giacchino shows an incredible musical economy. Despite some heightened musical moments, which we'll get to, there's more restraint in this film's music. Dawn was nearly wall-to-wall with score, while War allows a fair amount of scenes to play out without music, leaving space for the rich background atmospheres of the post-apocalyptic world. Choir is back in full force, this time acting as almost the hand of God. Giacchino Kino also pushes the Ligeti Requiem chorus, more wild, dense, and frightening. Chorus of the Damned to an angelic choir. As with Dawn, there's a sorrow that hangs over the story. In War's main theme, this sorrow reaches a new height as tragedy marks Caesar's life. The defining word of the film is biblical. The choir takes on this divine, celestial context. Caesar acts as the prophet, Moses of the apes, and he's put through the ultimate test as his wife and son are murdered, challenging his own morality. So we're introduced to another theme, one of intense grief, and once again it's established by a minimalist solo piano. Jerry Goldsmith's original work is again alluded to. This composition has a sense of looping that recalls the Echoplex, and an apprehensive flute motif that would belong at home in a 70s Goldsmith score. The scene leading up to the murder of Caesar's family is full of anxiety as the colonel, a Kurtz-like military cult leader, heads a stealthy operation into Caesar's camp. After the murder, the two leaders come face to face. Director Matt Reeves sustains this encounter like a Sergio Leone-style standoff, holding on tight close-ups of eyes and fists. We solidly establish a new musical motive, five notes on the kettle drum, first hinted at during the skirmish in the opening sequence. We could maybe call this the Colonel's theme, but it's also related to his influence, both on the humans and on Caesar. Here also, Giacchino deftly recognizes the Sergio Leone direction, and gives us an Ennio Morricone trope, the tambourine rattles in between the timpani phrases. After the attack, it's clearly no longer safe in the colony for the apes. They must flee. We get a brief reprise of the burdened, reluctant leader theme established so powerfully at the end of Dawn. Remember that this theme has a darkness to it, but connects him to a sense of duty to his tribe. Takes a turn. Caesar decides not to join them. He hops on a horse and slings a rifle over his shoulder. film begins to embrace another genre. Giacchino pulls from the Ennio Morricone-famed spaghetti western vocabulary to give it a revenge western flavor. A few of Caesar's closest companions join him, and they ride out into the wilderness. The strumming guitar, the vocal grunting and chanting, and jangling tambourine were all pure Morricone. Here's Death Rides a Horse from Morricone. Listen to the instrumentation. Even some of the Giacchino track names are overt references to Morricone. Ecstasy of the Bold, A Man Named Suicide. Here's a Morricone cue from La Moglie Più Bella, The Most Beautiful Wife, that some have pointed out is melodically similar. Back to the Giacchino. So much to talk about with this cue, it's so loaded with influence. And for fun, I stumbled across this on the YouTube channel Shake the Box. Here's a comparison to the music in Super Mario Bros. 2. And that video also linked me to another use of the melody in an instrumental jazz record of selections from Gershwin's Porgy and Bess by trumpeter Charlie Spivak. The song is It Ain't Necessarily So. So I guess it's a popular melody. I can see Giacchino being coy enough to borrow from Mario, especially because he has a background in video game music. The other big bit of stylistic film composer allusion in Giacchino's track is John Barry. John Barry is maybe most known for his work as the original and longtime composer for the James Bond movies. For Bond, he established a reckless and dreamy mood. Think lush, sweeping strings, daring brass, and romantic harp glissandos. Listen particularly to this melody in the background that eventually ends the War for the Planet of the Apes track. Here's Barry's work in Goldfinger, the score that solidified the 007 sound. We talked about the Star Wars sounding suspense cue in Rise of the Planet of the Apes. Now in War for the Planet of the Apes, does this not sound like a suspense cue from a James Bond movie? What if I add something like this?
Mr. Bond, I expect you to die.
And this track from Apes as well, particularly the harp and the high soft string line. All of these influences speak to an important character deviation for Caesar. I call this theme his anti-hero theme, or his wayward hero theme. It's dangerous and swaggering. His revenge quest is bending his morality. There is a little James Bond in the irreverence, and a little Clint Eastwood in his brooding, cynical attitude. Along the journey, his ape companions are concerned about his dark turn. They come across a ghost town, again a touch of the Western, where they find a little girl, unable to speak, one they will name Nova. This, of course, a reference to the 1968 film. Her innocence and kindness serve as a counterpoint to Caesar's anger at humanity. Giacchino often gives us Nova's theme with a childlike orchestration, simple harp plucks under bells. A soft chorus bed. There's an irony to the soft choir. The human voice, an instrument first used in this series to hint at the apes rising in intelligence, is now tied to Nova, whose human species is now losing their voice in superiority. This theme will often give way to the anti-hero theme, briefly beckoning Caesar back to the light before he tosses it aside. This tragic doom of the human race is underlined by a reprise of the main theme from the previous film, Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. Remember, this theme is tied to the sadness and devastation of humanity caused by the apocalypse. The muteness of the species has been brought on by a reoccurrence of the plague. The Colonel, bent on preserving the superiority of his species, is methodically executing anyone that loses their voice. Caesar and his band come upon the bodies as they track the Alpha Omega, the Colonel's army. Once Caesar catches up to the Colonel, he realizes he's made a huge mistake. By breaking from his tribe, he's allowed them to be captured. They're now prisoners in the Colonel's camp, beaten, starved, and forced into labor. Caesar himself is captured. His other son, Cornelius, is among the imprisoned. But the band he set out with is still undetected. Nova, the human girl, sneaks into the camp to give him food and water. Her compassion reawakens his own. He begins to turn back towards the light. His leadership theme begins to make its way back in as he re-embraces his leadership position. Giacchino once again shades the music in Western colors, with a trumpet even forward in the orchestra. Thank you. This track is called Ecstasy of the Bold, a reference to a famous Ennio Morricone track from The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, The Ecstasy of Gold. Back half of War for the Planet of the Apes is a pastiche of genres dealing with imprisonment. It has overtones of the Holocaust and of slavery. With Caesar's return to leadership, the apes begin to resist and rebel. In some ways, even more than Dawn, Giacchino carves out some space for playfulness among all the heavier stuff. The Morricone element is also woven in. Notice the auxiliary percussion, guitar and harmonica. The apes are planning their escape. This track, I believe, is a direct reference to Jerry Goldsmith, his score for the sci-fi horror film Link, where a hyper-intelligent ape takes revenge on the humans who try to put him down. Here's Link by Jerry Goldsmith from 1986. During the actual prison break, the playfulness reaches a fever pitch with this dark and goofy, Danny Elfman-inspired cue. Like the cuíca in the original score, the timbre of the reed instrument playing the melody almost sounds like monkey vocalizations. It's a nice bit of fun after everything that's come before it. The reason the suspense works despite the wacky orchestration is because I think Giacchino is dancing around a Dies Irae motif. I think it's worthwhile to sidebar here because we'll probably be talking about this melody in a lot of future podcasts. The Dies Irae is an old religious melody meant to evoke Judgment Day. It means Day of Wrath. The original chant version goes like this. For our purposes, we're mostly interested in the beginning phrase. It's used to create dread and is probably the most popular melody in all of film scoring. The Shining opens with it. Part of Sauron's theme in The Lord of the Rings. Listen to the bass in the background. Most of the composers we've talked about here have used it. Bernard Herrmann in Jason and the Argonauts. John Williams in Star Wars. Yeah. Close Encounters of the Third Kind. In Jurassic Park. Ennio Morricone, using the original Latin and with the usual Morricone stylistic flair in Escalation. Our original Apes composer, Jerry Goldsmith, liked to use it in horror scores. The Mephisto Waltz. It's a significant part of Ave Satani, the main theme for The Omen. Michael Giacchino himself seems to like it. Kate's theme in Lost is built using it. Giacchino designed the entire climactic sequence of Rogue One around Dies Irae, using just the first two notes, leaving it unresolved for a long time. Before launching fully into it. It's interesting in War that Giacchino is paraphrasing the motif for the good guys. There's another composer who's good at turning creepy melodies into devilish humor, Danny Elfman.
Merry Christmas is so fine.
It's ours this time, and won't the children be surprised? It's ours this time!
Making Christmas from Nightmare Before Christmas, also designed from a Dies Irae, which is perhaps why this ape track reminds us of Burton and Elfman. So back to War, another human army shows up to attack the colonel's base. The apes are almost out, and the chaos of the attack is making their escape even easier. But Caesar lingers behind. He wants to kill the colonel before he joins them. Ready to kill, Caesar comes upon the colonel, but he's drunk and bedridden. The plague's gotten to him, and he himself has lost his voice. At this moment, Caesar finds Nova's doll. That's what's passed the virus to the colonel. As he spots the doll, we get a brief phrasing of Nova's theme. The theme that's always tied to compassion, the theme that's been challenging his vengeance. The small use of the theme here is brilliant because it not only helps the reveal and the twist, but it illustrates the character's decision. Caesar remembers Nova's kindness, finds his empathy, and decides against murder. Caesar heads to rejoin his tribe, but not before doing what he can to destroy the Alpha and Omega compound. He tosses a grenade at the oil tanks, which will not only blow up the compound, but will partly lead to an almost divine intervention, an avalanche that destroys the other invading army. But not before he sustains a mortal wound in the process. Throughout the film, the massive choir imbues the story with a mythological essence. The other important genre reference point in war is that of the biblical epic. Reeves very explicitly paints Caesar as a figure of myth, a prophet, a Moses type. In the biblical epic, the vocal chorus takes on a hand of God quality. It's the voice of the angels. Here's Miklos Rozsa's score for Ben-Hur. Caesar chooses compassion over hate and fulfills the rescue of his people, leading them on a journey to a Canaan-like promised land where they can hope to build a peaceful society. However, Caesar must pay a price for his vengeance quest. He was injured in the escape and, dying, must say his goodbyes. This final track acts as a culmination to the entire trilogy. There's a touch of the divine in the air. Caesar's theme, established in Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, plays out as a quiet, bittersweet piano line.
Don't worry. Maurice. You are all home.
His theme will repeat, ascending with the chorus into the angelic and the mythical. With the tubular bells ringing like church bells, Caesar's leadership theme intermixes with war's main theme of loss. his dearest friend Maurice watches as he passes away into legend. Camera tilts up to the sky as if to suggest an ascension to heaven. Light bells strike a humble phrase from Caesar's personal theme. Humanizing him in his final moments. There's a relief. He can finally let go, knowing he saved his people. Once again, compare this highly emotional and very religious musical ending to the cynical and atheistic ending of the 1968 original. The original Planet of the Apes has no score over the credits, only the unfeeling incidental sound of nature. Waves crashing against the beach where the symbol of humanity's folly is buried in sand. That does it for this episode of Keynotes and for the 3-episode arc all about the music of Planet of the Apes. I hope you enjoyed it. Before I go, I want to list off some sources that were essential to this episode. The Wharf the Planet of the Apes Blu-ray featurette, Music for Apes, about Michael Giacchino's score. The article Simian Symphony, How Apes Music Evolved from Man, by Scorekeeper, featured in Birth Movies Death magazine's Planet of the Apes issue, which gives a broad overview of the history of the apes' scores. This magazine is currently sold on mondotees.com and is full of great articles, as are all Birth Movies Death releases. The Soundcast and Cinematic Sound Radio podcast episodes on War for the Planet of the Apes, which connected me to Ennio Morricone's La Moglie Più Bella score. You can subscribe to the Soundcast and Cinematic Sound Radio podcasts on iTunes. Rebel Force Radio's Star Wars Oxygen, the Music of John Williams series, which gave me a lot of my insight on the scores for Star Wars, which was very valuable in this episode. You can subscribe to Rebel Force Radio on iTunes. A special thanks to my musical friends who understand music theory much more thoroughly than I do, Dustin Painter and Julie Papelka, who patiently field all my musical questions. You can find a Spotify playlist of all the music tracks used in this episode on our Spotify account, Keynotes Podcast One Word, which is also linked in the show notes. I'd love to hear your thoughts on the podcast. Please subscribe, rate, review, or just leave a comment on iTunes or your respective podcast platform. Or you can email us at keynotespodcast@gmail.com. You can find Keynotes on Twitter at One Word Keynotes Podcast, and you can find me on Twitter at Nick Nylon. I'm also co-host of another podcast, a more casual discussion-based show called Spinoff, which tackles new film releases and connects them to other movies. Please check it out, which you can find on Twitter @spinoff_podcast. The link is in our bio. And finally, to play us out, here's the War for the Planet of the Apes end credits suite from Michael Giacchino. Thanks so much for listening.